And welcome into the Tuesday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Connor Newt, in for Ian Safar again today, who remains in parts unknown on vacation. Rex Road, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Just looking at this Denzel Clark.
That's unbelievable.
That's a catch. The Denzel Clark of the A's, if anybody missed it. That's catch of the year, I'm going to guess.
You know, every now and then.
There's a chance we catch of the year.
You and I, because we don't really have a whole lot of things to watch on the studio TVs at 6 a.m., shockingly. You know, the top 10 plays from SportsCenter are frequent appearances in our viewing habits in the morning.
Yes.
And I would say, I don't know if more times than not is correct, but many times some of the baseball catches that they put in these top plays, it's like, okay, cool, good catch, dude.
Yeah
that one, I think that is no lie, one of the greatest catches I've ever seen by a center fielder. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, he went way over. That was like a clear home run. It wasn't like right at the – like it was going to clear the fence by 10 feet.
By like 5, 6 feet. Yeah, it's crazy.
And to do it all in one motion, the way he did it too, you know, kind of bring himself back around, pretty awesome. Yes, they. I think sometimes, I'm sure the people who work on the, you know, top 10 plays work hard, but sometimes I feel like they're just like, yeah, there's a pretty good play by the shortstop, throw that in there. And obviously, certain times of year, you have less stuff to pick from, but that one was wow.
No doubt about that. Connor Newt, how we doing? What's going on?
I'm waking up. I'm not a total shell of myself like I was yesterday.
I'm pretty sure Connor Newt was dead for about half the show yesterday. He does look a little bit more lively this morning.
Like a
I went to bed
movie.
At 9,
yeah.
So I'm relaxed.
But did you even know how to do that? Like, when's the last time you went to sleep at 9 o'clock?
Probably 10, 15 years ago. I mean, God. But I took a little nap yesterday after the show, and then I went to bed at 9. So I'm well rested.
All right.
I will do the same thing again today.
Okay.
There you go.
I didn't know if Newt was going to make it through the whole week after yesterday's show, but he looks like he's making progress today. Good stuff.
We're getting there.
That's good.
You'll be tired AF on Friday, but it'll be Friday.
What's so AF? Is that as fart?
Yes.
Okay.
Nice.
Yes. There you go.
Very well done. George on the YouTube chat was saying, I didn't hear the call, but I heard Robbie's meltdown when I was driving yesterday and almost ran off the road. Some other YouTubers talking about my long fuse as well. So good stuff. I've been into Rex Road territory.
I know. I tell you what. It's time. If you're going to talk bad about the Vols, Robbie's going to scream at you. So just be ready. It's the new era of the show. And by the way, hit us up on the YouTube chat today.
Yeah, we need the comments on the YouTube chat. I'm not going to say the text line is down. I'm going to say that we have been kicked out of the text line.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably more accurate.
How does that happen?
So we have been forcibly removed from the text line until further notice. So until that time in which we're back in there, hit up our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, and, of course, our YouTube chat, which is already flowing this morning here on the program. So we appreciate everybody on those fronts.
Just be careful what you say about the Vols.
Yeah.
You know what will happen to you.
You better watch out for the rest of the show today. Not a great Game 3 in the Stanley Cup Final last night. It had been an awesome series up until that point. And last night, I mean, Florida basically just slapped Edmonton up and down the ice. I thought it was a combination of a couple of things. I thought Florida got to their game, obviously, way quicker than the Oilers ever did. The Oilers really didn't. It was a combination as the game went on, as Florida looking like they were at their best and Edmonton being off. And that's how you end up with a 6-1 final between these two teams. It was a weird game. I mean, the first period, it was basically a penalty fest. Like, it was a power play competition in the first period. And then Florida broke out a little bit in the second, and it felt like about halfway through the second period for the remainder of the game, Edmonton wasn't actually interested in making a comeback. They were interested in trying to level things up physically.
Yep.
And they had spent all this time talking about, you know, how they were probably a more emotionally mature team, and they had older guys this year, and they were more ready for the playoffs. And they did not look like that last night. They looked like they let Florida get under their skin. And it's gone the way – going back to look at weekend winners. It's gone the way that I thought it would so far. And I fully anticipate a huge Edmonton response coming up in game four. But I will say, Joe, like game four is a pretty massive moment for the Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl era in Edmonton. If they lose game four, it's not over, as we saw last year, but they're down 3-1. And the idea that you're just going to like always mount this comeback against Florida, like I just don't think that's living in the land of realism. So I think game four is absolutely massive for the McDavid, Draisaitl era and what the future of all that could look like coming up on Thursday.
Absolutely. It was – I mean, they should be embarrassed. They should be embarrassed with how they reacted, given the stakes and how they just completely let Florida take them off their game. And, I mean, I like the, you know, I mean, you know, the endless scrap that it basically it was just like, you know, just, I mean, finally it's like, okay, guys, can we separate you? I don't even have to do anything to separate you. They just, like, fall away and, you know. But, I mean, they just completely lost their composure. At some point, you know, like, this happens in a hockey game, you know, you're it's clear you're going to lose. And, you know, okay, so you're going to get a little measure of, teams learned they hate each other real quickly in these series. These guys already have a history. But I thought it was too quickly that they lost their composure.
It's like the middle of the second period.
Yeah, like they still could have made a game of it. And I agree, it sets up just a gigantic moment for them, which as a sports fan, like I hope they respond. I mean, I don't really want you to get the lock and the 2 points and tie me up in weekend winners, which is what will happen. But I still have to root for it.
Yeah, like, first off, I think it would be a shame if Florida just wraps this thing. Like, if they go up 3-1 and it's like, all right, well, Edmonton is just going to have such an uphill climb. Like, I think this series deserves a little back and forth. I think you're going to see a little back and forth. And frankly, like, it's hard for Edmonton to play much worse than they did last night. So I think you're going to see a much better effort. But I did, about halfway through the game last night, get reminded, Joe, of, yeah, you idiot. Why did you pick against Florida in this series? Like, why? Until proven otherwise at this point, why would you ever pick against Florida? And I did think about that halfway through the game.
And the
last
next
night.
Time McDavid slices through everyone and makes some ridiculous play and Draisaitl finishes it to win the game, you'd be like, yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
No, it's. I fully expect a response from McDavid and Draisaitl specifically in game four, where, like, every now and then McDavid gets in one of those modes where you basically are going to have to like peel him off the ice if you're going to stop him from doing anything. And I feel like he'll probably play that way on Thursday. But like, say they lose and they're coming back and they eventually just get eliminated here in this series. Like, there's no guarantee that you're getting back there if he stays, right? Like, you know,
of course not.
Will they at some point? Let's say he signs a long-term deal this offseason. Will they get back there at some point? Probably, because those two are so good that they just don't need a ton of help to get there. But, I mean, right now they're in the prime of their career. It's very difficult to get back there 3 years in a row. And look, I have no idea how Connor McDavid is going to view this if they lose, right? Like, especially if they come out and they just get punked again and they lose in five to Florida. Like, how's he going to view that moving forward? So I've said it. If I was him, like, I would keep every one of my options open until the moment where I no longer can keep one of my options open. I don't know if he views it the same way, but it's a pretty massive – I can tell you that's going to be a huge talking point heading into game four of just how big this moment is for that group in game four coming up on Thursday.
Yeah. Look, no question about it. And, you know, Draisaitl's 29, McDavid's 28. They have great years left, but they don't have – you know, they're not 25 and 24 anymore, you know? Which was 4 years ago, by the way. Thank you.
It was.
That's per my math.
That's good stuff.
So, yeah. I mean, look, if you're him, I think you'd have to look around and keep your options open. Like you said, maybe he's resolved and it's like, no, this is it. I'm going to be an Edmonton Oilers the rest of my career. Certainly playing with Draisaitl.
Very appealing.
It's a force multiplier, without question. But yeah, he can make a lot of players better and excel in a lot of situations.
And beyond though, just the idea of maybe him leaving at some point, it's time for those two, as great players as they are, like, they got to win a championship, right? Like, let's, even if you're assuming that they're just going to be together, the rest of their career. I mean, you're going on, I think this is year 11 for McDavid, right? So, I mean, it's hard to believe, but this is where they're supposed to be winning. Like, they're right smack in the middle of their prime right now, and they're supposed to be winning championships. So, I think all of that said, you're going to see them respond in a big way in Game 4, and I think they'll probably win. The one thing that makes me nervous if you're an Edmonton fan is I don't think that Stuart Skinner was awful last night. I think some of the goals, that there's just not a whole lot that you can do about it. But I heard him talking about this on the TNT broadcast. Like, it just felt like one of those games that leaves you looking at him and saying, man, is he about to just collapse? And do you make a goaltending change heading into Game 4? Like, Knobloch, the coach of the Oilers, has not been afraid to change the goalies around in the playoffs over the last 2 years. I don't think he'll change it going into Game 4, but that is going to be a huge talking point heading into that game, is what they're going to do with the goalie.
And he's played really well at times,
yes,
during this run. But, yeah, I mean, there was some between periods analysis of, you know, what he was doing with his feet and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very interesting. And, yeah, you can't have that. I mean, you already are under siege. Like, any goalie in this matchup against that team right now, it's tough sledding, you know. And if you have a softier two added to the mix, I mean, that's the difference.
Yeah, and again, I don't think he was terrible last night, but I do think there, you know, especially earlier in the game, there's probably a goal or two that went in that you just like to see your goalie stop in a big game like that, and he didn't do it. So, you know, there's a lot that went wrong for Edmonton last night, but I was kind of stunned that they got punked as badly as they did by the Panthers last night. Now Florida leads 2-1 in the best of seven series. Speaking of Florida, I think there is going to be a natural question that many Predators fans will ask whenever this series is done and free agency begins, and it relates to the Florida Panthers. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Taking your thoughts on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, and our YouTube chat on our 102.5 The Game YouTube page. So, Joe, there's a question that at the moment I saw a little bit from Predators fans last night. I think you'll hear more of as we get closer to the offseason. And that is, what about Sam Bennett of the Florida Panthers, who just having an unbelievable postseason right now? He will be a free agent. He is does not have a contract extension with the Florida Panthers coming up yet. Now, a couple things on the Bennett front. Number one, we have heard Barry Trotz say that he does not expect to be overly active in free agency this summer, right? He said, basically, this class, it's not a whole lot out there. And I would generally agree with that. Now, I think Sam Bennett is a very good player, and I think that as a centerman, he's going to get a pretty good raise from what he's making right now. Now, having said all that, I would be absolutely stunned if Florida lets him get away. I don't think Florida is ultimately going to let him get away. A lot of the reporting around it right now is it's very highly likely that he's back in Florida. So keep all that in mind when we enter into this discussion. He's an interesting guy because Bennett is a fourth overall pick from back in 2014, which, by the way, they ran this graphic last night, which is kind of unbelievable to believe. Like, go look at the first four picks in the 2014 draft. They're all playing in this series. Three of them are on Florida, and then there's Dreisaitl on Edmonton. So that's pretty incredible. But Bennett is a guy that, if you look out through the course of his career in the regular season, his career high for points in a year is this year 51, which is good. Like, there's nothing wrong with a 51-point season. But you look at the way that he's played in the playoffs – and if you had never watched him play before, you would think that he's like a 100-point guy.
Yeah.
And you look at the last three postseasons for him, he had, let's see here, 15 points in 20 games in their run to the final in 2023. He had 14 points last year, 7 goals, 7 assists in 19 games when they won the championship. And then so far this year, he's got 14 goals, 20 points in 20 games. And if they win
the
cup, probably is going to win the Conn Smythe. That's where he's at right now. So I did see it last night from some Predators fans of, Sam Bennett, he plays center. Go out there and get him. I don't think he's going to make it to free agency. Frankly, if he did, I don't think he would choose the Predators based on where their roster is right now. But I do like the idea from Predators fans out there.
Absolutely. Well, you know, every once in a while the Athletic asked me to do a little Preds thing, a little Titans thing, and last week they had the question of who should they go after in free agency. I mean, Sam Bennett. I wrote the same thing. It's like, he's probably not going to leave. And also, why would he pick the Preds? However, if there is a target in free agency, absolutely it's this guy. You're talking about the opposite of some of the, you talk about players who do things the regular season, all of a sudden the time and space gets taken away, and then they look like different players, not in a good way in the postseason. This guy, the way he plays, he's a beast, man. And it'd be a great addition for the Preds or for a lot of teams, but
I don't think it's going to get there.
They have some choices to make, yeah. But I don't see how he's not the choice.
No, yeah, I don't either. I mean, the play that he made last night, I mean, more specifically, I guess the shift that he had last night, where he just delivers a totally legal, perfectly bone-crunching open ice check in the middle of the ice. He works to help get the puck back, and then he gets sprung free on a breakaway. And, like, he had Stuart Skinner almost going the complete opposite direction when he finished the goal going from backhand to forehand. I mean, that was a Conn Smythe type of shift. Like, if he wins the Conn Smythe, they go on to win the cup and he's the playoff MVP, that sequence last night is going to be the first thing they show. It's him just blowing the guy up over the middle, helping win the puck back, and then getting sprung free on a breakaway and making, like a high, high-level move to put the goal in. Like, it was awesome. Play by Sam Bennett last night. It's just weird to me how you look at his regular season stats and he's like, he's good. He's an okay player. And then he turns into just an absolute monster in the playoffs.
Yeah. So is that like, does he preserve himself a little bit during the regular season?
I think there's a little bit of something to that with this team specifically this year. I think there's a little something to that. But again, last year, he played in 69 games for the Panthers, had 40 points. Again, there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
Like, I'm not trying to –
the Preds would take that.
Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to dismiss the fact that he's basically been like a 40, 45, 50-point guy throughout his career, because there's nothing wrong with that. But, again, like, you watch him play in the playoffs, and if you'd never seen him play before, you would think that he's like an MVP candidate in the regular season every year.
Right, right. Yeah, it's – and that's the thing, too. If you go through – a run like last year, and you take it all the way as far as you can take it, and you know you're good enough to do it this year, you understand what a strain that is on you. You know, I mean, you have to do a little bit of maintenance.
A lot of conversation in the YouTube chat about if you're the Calgary Flames,
yeah,
you used to have Bennett and Matthew Tkachuk. That's a tough one.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course the Tkachuk stuff from a couple years ago here.
Yeah.
That's tough too. Also tough that Jared Morris says that Splenda is better than Stevia. Dude, that is a terrible, terrible
thing. I got to be honest with you. I don't know that I've ever had Stevia. I really don't. I don't know that I've ever had it. Are you about to hand me a packet of Stevia out of your pocket?
I mean, if I don't have Stevia in my pocket right now, it's a huge upset. I promise you I have some in my bag. I'll get you some, man, before
thanks.
The end of the show.
Appreciate it.
I mean, it's my lifeblood. Stevia.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I just don't think that I've ever actually done it.
There hasn't been a study yet. There has been with every other sweetener about the diseases it'll give you. As yes. of this point, I believe stevia, it's the stevia leaf. It's all natural.
That's good.
Yeah. And then you can do Truvia, which is it's stevia based.
Either, okay.
But it tastes the best by far, and it won't kill you, as far as we know.
That's good.
Yet, until the new study comes out that tells you why it will kill you, but I haven't seen it yet.
That's good.
Yep.
Here's another thing on the Preds front that I think we could probably just go ahead and shut down, because I know we're going to get questions about it as we get closer to July 1st. I don't think the Predators are going to go after Mitch Marner. I think you can probably safely say
that was the other
Marner
question.
Marner's probably not going to be on the radar for the Predators.
Yeah, that was the two questions from the Athletic. How heavily should the team go after Mitch Marner, and then what should be the target free, and a year ago we had a very different discussion about Marner without knowing all the stuff that was going to come, of the free agency period. That's like, hey, He may not be Barry Trotz's kind of guy, but it's also a big-time talent. You can't just – I mean, now I think there's absolutely no reason to even look at it, in my opinion.
I wouldn't either. Now, I mean, look, I say there's no – I don't think the Predators are doing that. I more specifically probably don't think Marner's doing that. But, like, if you're the Predators, I don't know that Marner – I'm not going to say he can't help you right now because he's still a really good player. I watch him play in the playoffs and some of the things that he doesn't do in terms of like the puck battles and being a little bit soft, quite frankly. And I look at that and I say, yeah, I don't know that Barry Trotz would love that. Like, no. I don't know that that screams Barry Trotz guy, not Mitch Marner.
Not at all. He did yell at his teammates.
He did. Though, yeah. So, which mean, to which I think I would have said, really?
You're yelling? That? Yeah. Okay, Mitch.
Very interesting stuff going on out there. But it will be all very interesting to see what the Predators do when free agency comes. As I've said, they're going to do something. Like just because Barry Trotz says they're not going to be as active doesn't mean they're going to be totally inactive by the time the free agency comes around. But I would wonder if it's more on the defensive side of things where they start to take a look when free agency comes around. So we'll see.
Alex Carrier?
What happens on the, yeah, maybe so. Maybe get
Dante Fabro, he available?
Maybe trade back for Carrier. Mm-hmm. Or Fabro is available. Just go sign him again.
Okay, there you go.
Just go do that.
Those are some good targets.
Jared on the YouTube chat says, give me the Splenda and the disease. So that's where Jared has drawn the line in the sand. I will take the disease. I will take the Splenda.
Have you not noticed that it tastes like crap too?
We got more conversation to get into on the college football front, college sports, based off the house settlement that we had yesterday, plus a new acronym that Rex Road is convinced you better get used to talking about in the world of college sports. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get-it-all. We will have Justin Mello of the Draft Network, author of Titans of the South, coming up at 7 o'clock. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. Blake Topmeyer from USA Today will join us at 8:30. And we'll get into the house settlement, all things college sports, with Blake a little bit later in the show. Our YouTube chat is flowing. Join us on the YouTube chat. Our text line is not down, but we have been locked out. Rex Road and I have been forcibly removed from the text line. So keep them coming on the phone line. You can call us or the YouTube chat, which continues to take shots at Rex Road, basically, is what's going on over there.
Yeah. Got to, you know, bring up the NBA take.
People are very upset with your NBA take over the last few days.
I'm so sorry that the teams of long ago would dominate. I think my favorite one of all of them was like, well, Will Chamberlain scoring 100. What does that tell you? I think it tells you exactly what I'm saying to you.
Maybe the talent level wasn't up
to
par.
Do you think Will Chamberlain would score 100 now?
I'm going to say probably
like
not.
Turning around and dropping it in the hoop. These little kids like, I mean, it's like.
Some of those clips are fun to watch from back in the old days. Yeah. Good stuff. Really good stuff. Joe, we discussed the House settlement yesterday and what this could mean for the future of college sports and how the money basically is just going to be allocated here moving forward. So program schools basically have $20.5 million to really just do whatever they want to do with in terms of payment to the players, and then you still have traditional NIL stuff that is going to be continued to go on, although maybe enforcement of it. We'll see if it if that actually works and it's quote-unquote real NIL that they're able to enforce. But tell us about another thing that has come out of all this, which is the College Sports Commission, which is a new term that you believe college sports fans around the country need to familiarize themselves with and that we'll be talking a lot about over the next few years here. What is the College Sports Commission? Why is it important? And what sort of a role is it about to play in the world of college sports?
Yeah, so the CSC will be, like if someone said NIL to you 5 years ago.
I have no idea what they're talking about.
Right, like trying to think, like Nana-in-law or something like
nice.
That.
Yeah, good.
Maybe something like that, right? Nana-in-law?
Very well know. Done.
NIL. NIL. Well, now it's a, I mean, people just use that as a replacement for money now.
Yeah.
I want to get some NIL. Well, what do you mean? Give me some NIL. Like money? Okay. That's what it means. It just means money.
Yeah.
So the CSC will be, Yeah, it'll be another one of these college sports acronyms. Just get used to it. CSC, the College Sports Commission. The thing is, people who I respect, who are smarter than me, who are in college athletics, I've talked to, are like, actually, if you listen to the whole presentation, it's actually pretty impressive. Like, I think it's got a chance. Okay. That's the only reason I'm not, like, completely melting down right now. Because I can't get there. But I'm trying to keep an open mind. So this is basically going to replace the NCAA when it comes to, like, the NCAA will still be enforcing, like, I believe, like, the Connor Stallion stuff is happening this week,
yep.
Right? Like, the Michigan hearing. Be very interesting to see what they get. Michigan and Ohio State fans continue to scream at each other, and PK Subban has a really cool hat on behind you. Look at all the hats.
I did notice
wearing.
That. I was like, wow, it's PK Subban. All right.
But I'm so weirded out by this hat situation on the TV. But I believe, like, if there's another Connor Stallion situation, I think the NCAA would still deal with that. I know they definitely will still deal with academic stuff, eligibility stuff. But any money stuff now, basically, is this College Sports Commission. And so it goes live tomorrow. So starting tomorrow, any third-party NIL deal, that's name, image, likeness, worth at least $600. $600 or more. Anything that's $600 or more. You know, $598, you're good. Anybody can give you $500 and just – right, just up to 600, and you're fine.
Basically, anything is taxable. These guys are stepping in there.
So now this there'll be this clearinghouse. It's called NIL Go. The whole thing sounds like, is this real? This is some made up stuff just to mess with people. NIL Go, and it's run by Deloitte. You know, very very powerful accounting firm in the world that goes live tomorrow. So from now on, the CSC is going to be, you know, essentially enforcing these rules and trying to evaluate whether these things are fair market. It's also, they're trying to evaluate, is this a reasonable amount of money? Is this, you know, which again, my brain starts leaking out of my ears when I hear this stuff. This sounds so stupid. I'm trying to keep an open mind. Again, I think it's a lot of hope and it's just a big Hail Mary to me. Of all these people in college sports who want guardrails and they want this, because I think there's going to be – I think lawyers right now are absolutely just salivating at this situation. But this is what they're going to try to do. And they've hired Brian Seely. This is a guy who has been with MLB. We got a lot of MLB to college football crossover lately. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't either.
But he has been the longtime head of investigations. Now, they've had some investigations in MLB. They've had some stuff. So – he at least has experience with investigations, but he is now going to be the head of this CAC. So Brian Seely, which, again, I'm reading my guy Ralph Russo's story in The Athletic about him, saying he immediately could become one of the most powerful people in college sports. I think he and this organization could be one of the most lampooned things in college sports, but we'll see.
We will. Another thing in this piece by Russo, which we've talked about, and I'm going to be interested to see in actuality how this plays out. You know, they're talking about these formal agreements that they want the schools and the institutions to sign, where basically they, like, I don't know if contract is the right word, but they're like, we will abide by the rulings that you guys make here. And it's like, okay, well, that all sounds great in theory. But again, as we discussed yesterday, Joe, like, these schools – and specifically, like, these football programs and major men's basketball programs and places where there's just a lot of money involved, a lot of things at stake, and a hyper, hyper competitive environment. They have been looking for every possible advantage from the history of time. Forget the NIL stuff. Like, from the moment they started playing competitive sports, teams, programs, schools have been looking for every competitive advantage in sports that they could possibly get. So now I guess I'm just supposed to expect, Joe, that this CSC, this commission that they're putting together, is going to come up with these rules and regulations and guidelines and expect all these institutions to then sign it and then I guess hold each other accountable after that. And I keep thinking to myself, how long have we watched college sports? Like, do we actually think that that's going to happen? Do we think that, like, Georgia's going to be trying to land some recruit and they're going to be like, well, I don't know. We've kind of run out of money, so I just guess we'll let this guy go to Alabama. Like, I don't think we're living in reality with that type of thought process.
I totally agree with you. Again, I totally agree with you. And the problem is, like I said, there are some people who in the SEC who think, you know what, this actually has a chance. And I'm everything you just said, I totally agree with. I'm like, why? Why would it have a chance? You guys are gonna trample all over each other to get these top players because this can make the difference between a championship
because
or
you
not
always
winning a championship.
Have. And yeah. That was even before NIL. You always have.
Exactly. So I, you know, the hope is like one thing about the CSC, you know, you cut through some of the red tape. That's one thing I've heard is it's a lot more. It should be a lot more nimble and quick to respond. It's a much more confined group, you know, that you're trying to police and monitor. Yep. Everyone says they're all in. Everyone says the rallying cry to counter what you said, which again, I agree with 100%, but the rallying cry to counter it is we're all going to run out of money. That, you know, that's basically like all of us, yes, we all want to win all this stuff, but like our boosters aren't, they don't have like an endless, you know, pit of money. And if we don't try to take some kind of control of this, like that, we're all going to be screwed. That's what people are saying. Now, again, there are some boosters at some places. They're like, actually, I pretty much do have a limitless amount of money, and I'm going to continue to spend it to get players.
Yeah.
So
I don't think Oregon's boosters are running out of money.
Phil's okay.
Yeah,
he's going to be all right. So I'm very, and again, even if they are doing these things, and they are trying to actually police it, you know, then the lawyers come in and it's like, really? You're telling me that my deal, that's not a reasonable. How does Deloitte determine that? What's a reasonable amount? Here's what a reasonable amount is. What someone will pay you to play football for them. That's what the reasonable amount is. I
mean, isn't that kind of how we operate in this country?
As far as I know, that's kind of how we live. I don't know. Call me crazy. I mean, so again, it's like I'm trying to keep an open mind because, you know, I wish I saw all the presentation. Deloitte did all this stuff and showed them, and they were like, okay, that actually could work. So I don't know all the mechanisms here in place. But I do know the history and human nature. And like you said, you go back to college sports. The reason conferences exist is because people were just like hiring like 35-year-old farm boys to play fullback in 1903 for Iowa and just crushing Illinois, you know, with ringers. It's like, well, we probably should police some of this stuff.
That's the last time letting that farm boy out there from Iowa. The last time.
I mean, we're doing that. It was like Iowa was a huge. They apparently had the ringers, man. Just full grown men coming. Wait, those guys don't go to the University of Iowa? Killing people.
That guy's 37 years old. It's unbelievable. So we'll take your thoughts, your reaction to the College Sports Commission. Can they police college athletics and what it is today? Will it work? Or is this going to be a total disaster? We'll take more of your thoughts on that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is Staley's Chicago Italian Dining, one of Nashville's best-kept secrets and winners of numerous Best of Awards. Enjoy authentic Italian beef sandwiches, Vienna Chicago dogs, and the best gyros south of Chicago. Get half off a $20 gift card while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Justin Mello will join us coming up here at 7 o'clock. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him as minicamp is about to be underway. Blake Topmeyer from USA Today will join us at 8:30 to help us talk a little bit more about what we're discussing now, and that is the House settlement and the College Sports Commission that has been put in to be implemented tomorrow in the aftermath of that. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025 and in our YouTube chat as well. Brandon on the YouTube chat, Joe, says college football needs an MLB luxury tax model. You'll never get the haves to not figure out a way to gain a competitive advantage. What do you make of that, the luxury tax model? I've never heard that one suggested before.
Well, they got the MLB guy here who his quote is, quote, "I view this as an area where I can really add value," end quote. Sounds exactly like an NCAA suit right away. You'll fit right in, Brian.
He does.
Perfect. Also, his quote is saying, "I don't view this as the professionalization of college sports." Well, you missed that. That's you're well past that. Now, the point made here, you know, Seeley has done some investigations, you know, about circumventing the salary cap, which, again, there's not a hard salary cap in MLB anyway, but there is one for international talent acquisition. So he investigated some of those rules that the Braves broke in 2017. Braves GM got a 5-year ban, John Coppolella. And then he also had the Red Sox did something in the international market too and punished them in 2016. So I don't know, I mean, if that really applies to this, but it's an investigation without subpoena power, which, of course, is a big problem. It has been a big problem for the NCAA all these years, right?
Yep.
When it comes down to it, they don't have subpoena power, so anybody can say, "Nah, I'm not going to talk to you. Thanks. Have a good day." And that'll be the same thing here for the CSE. The CSE is not going to have any more power than the NCAA does. But, again, they believe these schools are all in because they're trying to help each other. And, look, when you talk about professionalization, Robbie, I mean, that is, like, in the NFL, you could make the case some of these franchises could be better off if there wasn't a cap, right? Like they
for
could,
sure, yeah.
And some of these franchises have more revenue, have way more fans, bring in more money, but they all share it and they all abide by it. And again, the big key there is, of course, their labor collectively bargains. And then they typically get the best of their labor in those negotiations, but at least the labor negotiates and, okay, fine, we'll play an 18th game, bring us up to 49.5%, and let's go. Another issue there, of course, is that's one sport, it's 32 teams. You know, the revenue's there, and they share it, whereas here we're talking this isn't just college football.
Right.
It's all these other sports and all way more schools, and it's not, you know, I mean, right now I think this is 20%. This is for all college athletes, and I think the $20.5 million, I want to say it's in that range of about 20%. So, again, that's for everybody. As opposed to like a pro league, you're close to 50-50 with the labor,
right?
You know, and it's just for that sport. That, you know, huge differences there, but the collectively bargained part of it, I think, is going to have to be part of this at some point. But hey, let's mess around with this for a few years. Why not?
I still think the most fascinating part of this commission specifically is going to be, okay, how are you enforcing the NIL stuff? And how are you determining what is quote-unquote legitimate NIL and what's not? And how does that hold up when the first time you say, oh, yeah, that's not legitimate, and the player involved and their representatives decide to sue you at that point? How does that hold up? Because, I mean, we're going to get there
sure.
at some point. It's going to happen. Like the first time that they come back with some determination that such and such did not meet the requirements for NIL – they're going to get sued, and then what's going to happen from that point on? I don't know. That to me is going to be, when this is all said and done, how we evaluate the success or failure of this sports commission is, are they actually able to do anything and police that? Or is this just all some big yapping point that they've got right now that in actuality is not going to play out that way?
Yeah, it's like, so, you know, I think, again, what they're hoping is that they can have quick responses and, okay, you're ineligible for two games or whatever, right?
You know, right.
It'll be heavily on ineligibility for the athlete in question, and maybe it could be like suspensions for coaches, stuff like that. But, yeah, the legitimacy of an NIL deal. Again, so, okay, I'm a Texas Tech booster. I own, you know, whatever. You know, I've got all this oil holdings, but I own several car dealerships. And, yeah, I want to pay this guy $2 million to endorse my car.
Yeah.
And he's going to do a couple commercials.
Yeah.
Okay?
How do you stop
that? You may think that that's ridiculous. And then it's way overpaying. And, you know, it's above market. But again, I got a lawyer here who says, nope, actually, this is in my mind, it's market value. No, those are the type of things that we're going to get into. And I just don't see how it goes well for the people trying to hold down revenue for anyone. That is really like the overall message we get from the judicial side of American life is you can't restrict earnings.
Yeah.
If the market says, I want to pay this person for their services this much, you can't restrict that. We're trying, though. We are trying our damnedest here, college sports.
It is an interesting point, the one you bring up of basically the counter argument to a lot of this stuff, which is they're going to run out of money at some point. I mean, I have, and we've talked about this, specifically as it relates to the booster, right? Like, the boosters used to be, well, let's have a little money under the table here, and let's not get caught doing it. But also, let's invest in our facilities. Let's invest in our football locker room.
And it's not every – it's like there'll be a few – every few years you'd have a big thing, but it's not like every year we must have this more.
Right, now but let's invest in all these different stuff. And we've talked about, like, it used to be basically an arms race for not only, like, who could under the table land some of these guys and have some financial incentive involved to it, but also, like – I mean, some of the stuff that used to be in, like, the LSU locker room of, like, oh, good, they all have their own, like, Xbox in their locker room and all this other stuff. Like, it was just absurd. And people talked about, like, going from college to the pros and what the difference was with some of their facilities. Yeah. Like, that used to be what it was. And I have always wondered, since all this NIL stuff started, is, like, when you're reloading basically every year and you're just investing dollar after dollar in your roster, we've seen teams, like, kind of stop investing towards some of their facilities around the country. And at what point does that kind of catch up and change the way you operate if you're these boosters?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. First of all, definitely the facility. It's probably a good thing. I mean, again, I'd rather see money go to people playing than like another
look
chocolate,
at this fountain
another chocolate
in here.
Fountain. Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, like, that really was it was like hiding money. I mean, it was seriously something like being a drug cartel and having a fake business to set up to clean your money. It really was. So the money now is going where it should go, which is good. And yeah, like, for example, Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt, it timed out pretty well for them because they just had to get up to date. And now they're building all this stuff, and they're going to be fine now for a long time. And yeah, we're not going to see all that stuff constantly go, which is a good thing. But yes, at what point do you, and it's like, how many times, because it will happen over and over again, will you say, this is the kid we need, and we, you know, this is what we need, and it's $3 million a year or whatever it is, and then the kid doesn't pan out, and you're a booster, and your return on, you know, if you're a booster and you invest in a facility, now granted, you want to see winning from that. So then if the coach doesn't win, the coach gets fired. But, like, okay, the facility is there. It's beautiful. It worked. Well, if you're investing in players on this kind of a basis without a cap and all this stuff, and then they keep failing, at some point, I don't care how rich you are, you're going to be like, you know what? Ask someone else.
Yeah, why am I doing this? I mean, you're going to say, get this coach out of here right now. Like, fuse is going to be quicker with some of these coaches if they're not making the right decisions.
Right. So the boosters have more power in that way directly. Look, my alma mater, Michigan State, you know, and look, the AD, Alan Haller, who got fired, I've known that guy for a long time. He was a great AD, great guy, great AD, a terrific eye for coaches. I mean, his hockey hire for Michigan State, tremendous women's basketball hire. All the good things that you want to see in an AD, but the money people weren't happy, you know. And it's what happens in a lot of places is you have some billionaires, but then it's like, are you casting the net wide enough? Because why am I being asked? It's like at Vanderbilt with why is his name eluding me? Help me out. Owns the soccer team.
Oh, John Ingram.
Yes, John Ingram. God. You know, it's like it seemed like for a while it was kind of like, well, we'll ask John if we can build this or that. And I think they've done a great job of widening the net. And that's another thing, too. You know, it's like anybody, no matter how rich they are, No matter how many billions they have, if they feel like they're just being taken advantage of at some point, they're going to have a problem with it. And they can get people fired.
Yep. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Justin Mello will join us coming up next from the Draft Network, author of Titans of the South. We'll get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. Robbie and Rex Rowe, 1025-1063, The Game.